So a couple buddies meet up at a Roy Moore, you know, rally, and one of them was saying, "Oh man, I got so hammered last night. It's out of control. I think I have a drinking problem." And his friend's like, "No, you're probably fine." He goes, "No, I got hammered. I went home and I was blowing chunks." And his friend says, "You puked before." He goes, "Chunks is my dog."
Bestiality. Copyright. Carnival personnel. Hi, everybody. I'm Joe.
I'm Jacques.
I'm Jim.
Big day once again. It's one of those, hey, let's pretend to prep for the show and let's have some talking points. Send it to Joe. 9, 10 o'clock last night.
I proofread it.
Proofread, you know, with a lot of proof. Anybody who knows me, there's a lot of proofreading going on. And, yeah, completely outdated by, 7, 8 a.m.?
I think by noontime. Yeah.
12 hours later. Yeah, completely.
We're recording this on the Friday prior to when you're listening to this, but we learned this afternoon that Mike Flynn, we all know him, we all love him, pled guilty to lying to the FBI. Jacques, take it away.
Well, no. What about you?
Jim, take it away.
What's your thoughts on this, Jim?
Wait, by the way, Jim's here, right?
Jim is here.
Okay, well, you just want to make sure that we...
Jim's here. Jim's right on the podcast.
Jim's on the podcast.
Ooh, Jim.
Jim's sitting right here.
Ooh.
Carnival personnel won't be the same.
Jim
is joining the podcast. Joining the podcast.
With a different tribe.
Jim, he's joining the podcast. Though he should be ashamed, cause his podcast is lame.
Jim is his name.
Jim. I'm a member.
And also a client.
I am carnival person.
Right, exactly. He puts the personnel in carnival person.
So yeah, I'm turning on the news this morning. First thing on all the headlines, CNN, Fox News, everything else that you flip the channels through, talking about Flynn pleading guilty to lying. Obviously, the next step that everybody wants to think about is what's the connection to the Trump administration, to Trump Jr., things of that nature. I tend to wonder about this. I don't have much experience at the federal level with anything like that, obviously, but I wonder. It's if the intention is, as the media always talks about, this being some sort of plea agreement where they're going to flip Flynn for information regarding the Trump administration or further connection. They picked a terrible charge to go forward with to do that. If you have somebody that you plan on bringing forward with information against somebody else and you use as your charge what they've been charged with as lying, it's
kind of compromises their integrity.
It makes me wonder what the actual charges were. It makes me wonder what they actually had on him. It'd be very difficult to go forward and use his information. I would imagine, and this is a layman's point of view here, I would imagine when your charge is a lying charge, or what, for lack of a better term, I don't know what the credibility your witness would have going forward.
Are you saying that they arrested John Lovitz from Saturday Night Live, the pathological liar? Yeah, it was Russia, see? Yeah, that's the ticket.
So, again, by the time anyone's listening to this, we could be – we'll know a lot more detail, and everyone will be like, you guys were way off.
Right.
But the thing is, here's the things that we know about going into the investigation. As soon as he left the White House, he retroactively registered as a foreign agent for Turkey. He retroactively also, you know, registered. There was a couple other countries that he retroactively registered for, which is kind of – you can't do that. You can't undo it. You can't, like, you know, put the genie back in the bottle. So everything that I've read and heard, those are the charges that kind of went away. It's not if he's going to flip on Trump. He has flipped on Trump because he didn't go in there and plead, like, not guilty, no contest. He went in and pled guilty to these charges. They have all the other charges they could have charged him with, but a deal had been struck. And we'll find that out. And the two interesting points is anybody who knows, like, you know, Joe and I were hypothesizing about this before Jim got over. It's like, yeah, you're not going and making a deal with Flynn to get his underlings. And so that's one of the – if a deal was struck. And here's one of the asinine things, and I don't know the behind the workings. None of us do. But it became a big thing about 2-3 months ago when Flynn was on his own, when the Trump inauguration campaign fund was paying Flynn's legal fees and then stopped. And why they stopped, we don't know. But they stopped, and Flynn had to sell a house and was in basically
– he was in dire straits, yeah.
And it's like this – wait – this is when you want to stop helping the guy out. This is the time, because this probably would be ill-advised to stop helping the guy now, unless they realized, okay, well, what he's going to do anyways, on our dime or not. But it is, by the time this podcast posts, we'll probably find out. But there was, over the last couple months, here are the charges that they're investigating. Here are the things that we publicly know about. We publicly know about the retroactively going back and registering. The interesting thing is, yeah, what is the next chip to fall? And again, when it became the candidate, Donald Trump, to what is the term, president in waiting?
President-elect.
President-elect. That's when the acting, director of the DOJ went to him and said, you cannot hire this guy. We have him under investigation. You cannot hire him. And he's hired. He goes into the administration, and this woman gets fired. You know what I mean? It's like, well, it's not like you weren't told, don't, and the whole thing with the FISA warrant, the fact that they went to Trump and say, we have a FISA warrant on him. And that's how they knew he was talking to Russia. Just to anybody who hasn't listened to me babble in the past, the way it works is you can eavesdrop on any conversation. If you think terrorist A in this country is talking to terrorist B in this country and they're not U.S. citizens, you can eavesdrop on the conversation. As soon as a U.S. citizen picks up the phone and is on the line, you have to disconnect unless you already have a warrant in advance. And they let the Trump administration know, we know this is going on. We have the FISA warrant. We've had it in place. He's under investigation. Do not hire him. And not only do you hire him, you make him in charge of all the secrets. It's not like they hired him to be the guy to get him his Coke Zeros. They hired him to be in charge of the most sensitive information we had, and it only lasted 24 days, but that's 24 days at a pretty fucking high position. So it's going to be interesting.
So what you got to look at is you got to look at when, and you can only assume, but you have to look at when they decided to go forward with this charge, which is part of the plea agreement. You have to say to yourself, what is their end game? They must have said, okay, what's our end game here? How does this charge help us? And it goes back and from the let's take the worst. I don't want to say the worst case scenario, but let's expand this out as far as it could potentially go with somebody else in the administration, if it ever does actually connect to the administration. Are there going to be criminal charges? Is this just going to be an impeachment process? Is it going to be something like that? And again, I'm going to go back to with the plea agreement and the charge of lying, we're kind of putting whoever that theoretical person may be the next chip to fall. We're kind of preparing that defense for him because you're looking at two things. One, the credibility of the witness, which was charged with lying by the FBI. And two, you're looking at the fact that you're saying part of the reason that he decided to play ball with the team is that he was in financial dire straits. Those two things would go a long way. Criminally speaking, as a defense, in my opinion, which is worth nothing, it would go a long way as far as a defense in an attack on the credibility of a witness like Michael Flynn.
When you say dire straits, I can't help but think your money ain't for nothing.
Chicks for free.
Thank you.
That little Clampett's got his own cement pond.
I hope
that
I got
little
all
Clampett's got a million. Oh, wait, that's something different. No. That's the Weird Al version.
I will not be able to hear dire straits without hearing dire straits.
Right. So, can I throw a knuckleball?
Please do.
Oh wow!
So let me throw. Let me throw this out there.
No, that's great. No.
And I'm not even going to try to rack my brain because it's just going to make me angry, and then I really won't be able to think of his name. But to go back to the Alabama Senate race, I believe another GOP candidate has started a write-in campaign, and I believe I can't think of his name, but I believe he was working under Flynn for a period of time, if I'm correct. I believe he's a former Marine, a retired Marine, and I believe he was working under Flynn in some capacity in some agency at some point. And, of course, I'm not going to be able to think of it now that I'm on the spot.
Well, the other thing with Flynn, it's not only the money. They have his son dead to rights as well, because his son was also involved in the turkey arrangements. And if you follow the turkey, you know, the thing with being a registered agent for Turkey is there's an imam in California that the Turkish government has been trying to get extradited to the to back to Turkey for several years. And it turns out, you know, the paperwork that we have seen that's come public is there was kind of a bounty, and Flynn was offered $3 million if he could get the U.S. government to extradite that imam back to Turkey. And his son was in the middle of that. So part of the flipping is, yeah, he's out of money and he's, you know, strapped. And the other thing, it's like, you know, he's throwing himself on the grenade for his kid.
And so the write-in candidate's name is Lee Bubsy.
Very good. Sorry, I just wasn't going to come to me.
Lee or Lee Bob?
Lee Bubsy.
Bubsy.
So before we throw
General Lee Bubsy.
Before we wrap this up, when Joe blows the Trump whistle, Joe, Jacques, what are your thoughts on this? Is there any predictions? Is there any where does it go?
27-4. No, wait, that's
not I think
two safeties.
Yeah. The next chip to fall is Jared. I think that he worked probably most with Flynn in this time capacity, because
not the subway guy.
But I have pitched that. Would not that be the greatest jail site? The new
Jared and Jared.
Hey, what are you in for? I'm in for fucking young girls. What are you in for? Fucking everyone else. This week on the Jareds. Okay, so moving on, before you blow the whistle, we had another celebrity passing this week, the great Jim Nabors. You guys, I don't know. You,
honestly,
I'm going to say no. Were you even in the Gomer Pyle world?
Well, actually, first of all, I want to say that when I found out that Jim Nabors died, I was surprised to find out that he wasn't dead already.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's one of those people that everybody thought, whoa. But yeah, and hopefully I can find it. Like, one of the 200 songs I recorded with Beyond It and Dan is the song Gomer. And the quick backstory on that, I have no recollection of ever rehearsing or playing this song. It was
go.
No.
Away. With that.
Lots of times we would have like three or four songs we were going to go in the studio and do, and you would rent it for like, you know, 4-hour window. And we would rehearse a lot so that we would be able to get it done in the short time we had. And we always had extra time and tape because it didn't take as many takes. And it wasn't that we were really proficient. I don't think we gave a fuck how it sounded. And a couple times we were like, hey, let's just start playing this other song. And one sign, the donut song my friend Rod did, but we have a song called Gomer, which is completely just yelling Gomer lines from Gomer Pyle,
USMC.
USMC. So, yeah, because I thought he died years ago because I heard they found him face down on the Hudson. They found him face down on the Hudson. You see, because he went out with Rock Hudson.
Oh!
And Rock Hudson died of AIDS.
All right.
And they were friends.
In my day, so they, our audience members know who Rock Hudson was. See, Rock Hudson
had no idea where you were going with
was
that.
Was an actor in the pictures. We called movies pictures back then because they were moving pictures.
So the other thing we talked about last week, and it's so pushed to the back burner, but net neutrality is going to become law of the land. And the most upsetting thing, other than it's becoming law of the land, have you heard any coverage of it at all outside of mainstream media? Any, like CNN, Fox, no one is talking about it.
I haven't heard about it because I'm just hearing about it now. So wait, it's net neutrality is law, or they're doing away with
net? They're doing away with net neutrality.
Okay, see, that's what,
and that's moving forward. But again, there's only a couple companies that own all the broadcast media, so they aren't even talking about it. So that's, you know, that is a bummer. And the other thing, as we're talking, and it might be the tax reform might be hammered on through by the time this podcast post because the Republicans had said tonight, yep, we're all done. We have enough to vote. And just before we started talking, Bernie Sanders came out and said, we haven't seen the bill. Like, they've made all these adjustments. They come out and say, we've made all these changes. We have 52 votes. Good night, everybody.
I just think the Republicans are streamlining the process because you'd always hear about, you know, senators and lawmakers not even reading bills after they're written. So they're just cutting out the middleman and not even writing the bill.
Just going voting.
Straight on voting.
Well, there was a couple Republican senators who actually said, yeah, I'm going to vote for it, but I haven't seen this. And I'm a little upset that I haven't seen it. But and they named six or seven lobbyists who were in the room that they weren't in on making changes. The lobbyists from K Street were allowed in, but other than the inner circle, but they're going to vote for it on party lines. And when McCain stepped up and didn't vote for the repeal of Obamacare, it wasn't that he liked Obamacare. He said, the due process isn't here. We're not taking the time to vet this. We're not taking the time to have hearings. I'm putting my foot down because this is wrong. And not doing it so much this time.
Right. I mean, this is the exact opposite. It's just like, after a long, hard thinking process, I am going to vote for this non-bill. Right. You're welcome, America.
Not even out there yet. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, So the last reading I did on the tax reform is a couple of days old. There's a lot of things in it that I'm not happy with. A lot of things that I'd be concerned about if it went through. Truthfully, like everybody else, I don't know where it currently stands. Some of the concerns that I have with it is there's a lot of stuff in there as far as like tax deductions, regarding your mortgage and interest. Yep. And things like that. And there's also a lot of stuff in there not being able to deduct your state and town taxes, which we're getting double whacked. I mean, our state and local taxes are obviously funding our fire departments, our police departments, and things of that nature. If we're not able to write that off, we're kind of getting double hit there. So it may not truly be the tax break that we're looking at just yet. So
us three will be fine because we all make $6 million a year.
Right, right. So we're
in the upper echelon. Yes, exactly. Right. The defunct sponsor, thank you.
The thing with you, Jim, is a concern for you. It's just 2 days ago, Rubio on a talk show says, yes, right now as it stands, it adds $1.5 trillion to the deficit. But you don't make those up by tax cuts. We have to relook at entitlements. And entitlements, again, Social Security, Medicaid. You have a mom who is dependent on these things.
Right.
You now have a homeowner. So you're worried about your mom. You're worried about that. You got two kids who, before you know it, are going to be going to college. And now all the interest, the other thing that they're doing away with is you used to be able to declare the interest on your student loan. Now you can't even declare the interest. But the inheritance tax, or as they call it, the death tax, I believe it's $3.5 million. If you're leaving $3.5 million of liquid assets behind, those won't be taxed. So everybody listening who has $3.5 million that they're worried about leaving behind, they're going to compensate by taking away Jim's mom's Medicaid and Medicare, our Social Security, but don't worry, your inheritance tax is going to be done away with. Yay! But then Rubio says, oh no, I didn't say that. And again, it's like you can't say it nowadays on live TV and say, oh, when I said inheritance tax or when I said entitlements, I didn't mean Social Security and Medicare. I meant Medicare and Social Security. So,
and I know there's a lot of talk that this is ready to go through, or there's a good chance this will go through, that they have the votes. I'm a little suspicious of that. I don't know if this will make it through either, along with everything else where we currently are. We're getting the good news out of it, I guess, is on top of everything else and all the sideshows, no pun intended, that we have, these things are actually getting plenty of debate, whether you're talking about...
No, they haven't had any debate.
No. I mean, over, I'm not saying this is going to make it through. I'm saying if this doesn't make it through, it'll be back at the table.
Oh, they said tonight we have the votes, and that's why Bernie Sanders.
But Trump said that
out.
The Democrats are going to obstruct it because they don't have a majority anywhere. So of course the Democrats are going to obstruct it, right?
So they said we haven't seen the bill. That's what Bernie Sanders is saying. We haven't seen the. They haven't given us a bill, but from Chambers they said we have 52 votes.
So just to go back, what I was saying at the beginning of this little segment that we started with the taxes is I'll be surprised if this. I know they're saying that this is going to go through. I'll be surprised if this makes it through. It might. I don't know, but we'll see.
So No, no, the last thing on... no more, okay.
I had a whistle.
Hold on. We can have a three-on-three here, a quick 5 minutes.
We're going to overtime now?
I did want to ask Jim, hate to always single you out.
No, I like it.
The Trump tweeting the discredited anti-Muslim stuff from the right-wing conspiracy website in England. Are you up to speed on that?
Yeah, and I'm not fully up to speed. Let me know if you've heard anything different. Long story short, if I understand correctly, he had tweeted or whatever the video was out of somebody that has some following and had some issues in Britain, and he's stating now that he didn't know who this person was or something along those lines.
So the website, the Twitter account, is of a woman who's the head of a very far right wing anti-Muslim hate group
in England.
And the video showed a young 16-17 Muslim boy fighting an elderly woman in the Netherlands, and they had said, oh, well, this is why you have to close your borders and you can't take in refugees and immigrants. Look at this. Well, that video 2-3 years ago, Netherlands had come out and said, yeah, this kid is attacking this woman. He was born in the Netherlands. He was raised in the Netherlands. He's never left the Netherlands. This has nothing to do about immigration. And so it's been one of those discredited, hateful things that have been going around taken out of context. So he tweets that video out.
Plus two more.
And now here's where he becomes the embarrassment. The Netherlands, the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, has to come out and say, we've been through this 2 years ago. This video isn't what you see. This is what's going on. And even Theresa May, the Prime Minister of England, says it's really inappropriate. You know, this is the same guy, because he had tweeted out Pepe the Frog stuff. He tweeted out Klan stuff during it.
Confederate flag.
He has a habit of tweeting out right-wing hate group stuff. But Huckleberry Sanders comes to the microphone and says, okay, that was discredited, but it still brings up the conversation that we need to be tougher on borders.
The videos may not be real. The threat is real.
The threat is real.
And that's what the president is talking about.
Right. And again, just I'll take this for a second. I'll eat this. Yeah, my understanding is at the end of the day, he was saying he didn't understand who the video was or what the circumstances of the video was. What's going on there, I can't explain that. I hate to say stupid, but it's stupid. I get it. Earlier in the week, at the beginning of the week, talk about how fast the news cycle moves. The Pocahontas statement, that was stupid. Absolutely stupid.
I was glad you brought that up.
It was absolutely just
Wait, what was
dumb.
Worse? I'll ask you. The Pocahontas thing, or the fact that he's having this ceremony to honor the Code Talkers in front of a mural of Andrew Jackson.
Right. Yeah. So we want to break down what happened first. So the ceremony was to honor some Native American, war heroes. Or Native American, yeah, right?
Anybody who don't know what the Code Talkers are, we know the Nazis had the Enigma machine. We had the Navajo Code Talkers, and they couldn't break the Navajo language. Every linguistic, even to today, I mean, the reason the language is dying out, if not almost all dead, it's almost an impossible language to learn and understand. That was our Enigma machine, these Code Talkers. So they would
translate from English to Navajo.
Right. That's how we would send messages, Navajo to Navajo. So we had a Code Talker on each side.
Right. So Trump was honoring them at the White House. And then, of course, when you're honoring Native Americans, you put them in front of the president responsible for the Trail of Tears. And
Manifest Destiny, baby. Right. Manifest Destiny.
And then you shoehorn a comment about how we have a lawmaker, a senator in our ranks, who they refer to as Pocahontas. Who's they? I forget who
that,
they.
That would be you.
Oh, right.
That would be you.
He's getting his pronouns mixed up.
Long story short, without getting caught up in the minutiae, he had a chance to throw out a Pocahontas insult, jab, whatever you want to call it, at her. It was way, way out of bounds. It was totally, totally not appropriate. It wasn't the place for it. I know that he, the same week, at the beginning of the week, if there's any sort of crazy correlation, he had the whole battle with the bosses of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And the only thing, the only crazy connection in my head that I can make that he may be thinking about is Elizabeth Warren's baby to a large degree.
Yeah.
Before she became
a senator.
Senator, her research and everything contributed to a lot of that.
Basically founded the CF.
Correct.
So let me get this straight. On one side, we have somebody fighting for consumer rights. On the other hand, we have a racist asshole.
Right. And, then, and by the way, where is the appropriate place to call a white woman Pocahontas? Or anybody a Pocahontas?
Right.
I think a Klan rally.
No,
so I think it's the only appropriate place.
So I'm gonna agree with you on that. That it was crazy. I'm gonna shy away from the racist part because I just don't want to go there. I don't like.
I mean, if you call every black person, hey, Jimmy Walker. If you call every Mexican, Jackie Chan. And you call every Chinese
person.
Fair enough.
I would not call a Mexican Jackie
fair
Chan.
Fair enough. If that were the case, then I would have to agree.
But that'd be funny to call every Mexican.
But I don't
Jackie
know that
Chan.
That's the case.
Okay, that's enough.
Let's do it. We are in
Christmas.
We're in the shootout.
No. We are into Christmas. So at the top of the show, we usually recap the sideshow that dropped last week, and I it was a fun sideshow. We did a sideshow on Christmas cottage industries. I talked at length about Jordan Marsh's Santa's Village. Joe truly scoured the internet. I always say we're going to post things, but we haven't. We are going to post those two. One was a commercial.
Yeah, one was an actual. No, well,
one was a newsreel.
They're both newsreel-ish because they were both in the 40s, so it was like pre-television. But one was a newsreel that. Showcase the Enchanted Village at Jordan Marsh with the 1940s talking guy, the announcer, department store in Boston, wows the children with animatronical wonderment.
But it's funny because, like I said, when we're talking about it's something that my mom's loved. And she wants my kids to love it. It's like they've been to Disney with 75, 80 years of advancement in animatronics and AI. It's beyond can't be dated. But when you see it, the wow factor of the time.
Well, it could have been manufactured wow factor. You know, those children could have been coerced.
Yeah, it's fake news.
Yeah,
fake
Google
news isn't a new
eyes.
Thing. So we talked about that. And then we also talked about my favorite Christmas movie, which is Scrooge, one of Joe's favorite. So each week we're going to talk a Christmas movie. And this week, Joe's taking the charge.
Oh, my goodness. Everybody loves this movie. And I watched it, I think, the day after Thanksgiving. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Chevy Chase's comedic swan song, in my opinion. I mean, it just...
Was it Randy Quaid's swan song, too?
No. He had Quick Change in 91, 1990. Yeah, exactly. And then also Independence Day was like 94, 95? I forget what that... But, you know, he's been around. Like, he didn't go into the crazy until the late 90s.
Okay.
So Randy Quaid was still a good at this point. But and this was like Randy Quaid's return as Cousin Eddie to the franchise because he wasn't in European Vacation, which was the prior Vacation movie. Of course, I saw European Vacation before I saw Vacation, and I'm not kidding.
Of course you did.
but this movie is a mainstay in my household and probably everybody else's household. I mean, there's so many quotable lines, so many things. Like, I think I heard Mele Kalikimaka the first time watching this movie, that dream sequence where Clark W. Griswold wants to build a swimming pool for his family and fulfill the suburban American dream. But to do so, he had to put down a huge down payment to get the pool in before the ground thawed or whatever the hell it was. But he was relying on his Christmas bonus. So he's worried that his Christmas bonus isn't going to arrive. And he's longingly looking outside his window late one night in his robe. And he's imagining the poolside antics. And then all of a sudden, you hear the song Mele Kalikimaka playing by Bing Crosby. And then all of a sudden, you know, Randy Quaid, who's on the diving board, about to take a dive, and then it dissolves into the shop girl that he fell in love with about a couple of scenes earlier, getting naked.
Okay, run through that shop scene again, because it was pretty great.
My favorite part is, you know, where Rusty sees him from afar, Johnny Galecki. He comes over and he walks up to the counter, and the shop girl is showing the panty line, how you can't see the line because it's so high. And Clark looks over and he looks over to Rusty and he goes, "Can't see the line, can you, Russ?" "Nope." And then like he just turns back and his eyes are like agog.
No, Dad.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's one of those other ones where I didn't realize that you know Richard Donner had done Scrooge. I didn't know how many in a 4 or 5 year period of time did John Hughes write every movie.
Oh, all the good ones.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he had Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. They had Home Alone, right?
I mean, it's incredible.
Was Home Alone a Hughes movie?
I thought so.
Yeah.
What do you stand on Christmas Vacation?
Christmas Vacation is one of my favorite movies. I I remember watching it more than one occasion with my mother, like late night, you know, through the holiday season. That's probably one of my memories of the movie mostly because it was always on with it, Channel 56 at least a couple of times.
Yes.
And I'm going to throw, if you remember talking about Chevy Chase, I don't believe it was our Christmas episode, but Jacques, you had a little ode to Chevy Chase on our formal edition where you went kind of stumbling out of the studio, knocking things over. And then we really knocked down the set by accident for Shake, Rattle, and Roll. And as all the hubcaps were rolling around on the floor, all the camera shows is the camera's looking at Bob, and Bob O'Malley's just looking back at the camera.
This is a real deep cut.
You should throw that on somewhere.
By the way, Cindy Campbell, if you're listening, I'm Facebook friends with Cindy Campbell.
If you thought
Christmas Vacation
was great, you should see that scene.
Maybe
comedic genius I am.
Yeah, maybe I'll do my homework this weekend and put that up on the web. But getting back to this great
well,
movie.
So the funny thing is, it's so non-gender specific. It's like it's one of management's favorite Christmas movies. And we bought a tree last weekend. We live right near a tree farm. You go out, they cut it down, you pick it out, and we carried it home because it's only a few houses away. We put it in the living room. Nope, not even close. Right. And all she looks at me and goes, "We Griswold this up pretty good."
But then let's go through real quick the characters. You have Randy Quaid and his wife. You have the uncle. Cousin Eddie. Yeah, Uncle Albert. Uncle Albert with the cigar that lights his Christmas tree on fire because it dries up because Eddie's dog was drinking the water out of the tree stand. And then the aunt, who actually was the original voice of Betty Boop.
What's that sound? Hey, it's a funny squeaky sound. You couldn't hear a dump truck driving through a nitroglycerin plant.
Gilbert Gottfried?
Yes, he was.
It is the number one grossing movie for the National Lampoon Vacations. The number two all-time grossing National Lampoon movie, only behind Animal House.
Wow.
Fun fact, and it's the only vacation movie that that had a spinoff, but a right-to-TV, you know.
Yeah, the direct-to-DVD. Eddie's Hawaiian Vacation?
Vacation, something like that. How many times will you see it between now and Christmas?
I'm watching it actually right now under the table. You guys can't see.
Is it a family thing?
Do
you watch it with?
I watch it with like my older son. You know what? It is kind of a family thing because really, you know, my boys are old enough now where like that stuff is like pales in comparison to what they might see on YouTube now. Right. But it's just like
everything pales. New porn's the only thing that trumps YouTube when it comes to.
I mean, and I'm, honestly, I don't think I'll ever get over Beverly D'Angelo. I mean, she's just like I like her a lot.
Well,
I guess I'm alone on that.
No.
I'm drifting away. No, bye, guys.
Joe! All right. Well, with Christmas in hand, time to go buy some presents, need some cash.
Oh, boy. I guess it means it's time to play our defunct sponsor. defunct. Come on, stop it.
Bring the funk.
bring the noise. Bring the defunct sponsor of the week.
Mail call.
More letters. It seems everybody's asking if they're really cornflakes, how come they're called post toasties? Here's how come. They're called post toasties because they're toasted cornflakes. Toasties. Toasting makes things taste better, crisper. You know, it brings out the flavor. That's why post toast their cornflakes. See? Post toasties. When you want cornflakes, try toasted ones. Post toasties cornflakes.
I was talking to Joe about this and reading some stats and listening to sports radio on the way over. Jim, you're a football guy. You know more than just the Patriots. You want to guess in the 40 years, or maybe it's 50 years, the Bills have played at Rich Stadium. It's changed its name a couple times. I don't technically know what the name is now, but when I was growing up, it was Rich Stadium. Of all the quarterbacks in the history of Buffalo, who do you think is the third winningest quarterback on Rich Field?
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady will become number three if he beats Buffalo. Drew Bledsoe played three seasons there of 16 games, so eight games a season.
Yeah, that's right. He was there.
You know, so Ferguson was the guy when I was growing up in like the 70s and early 80s. He's number two behind Jim Kelly, who for 10 years, Jim Kelly was it in the AFC anyways. Can you believe that? In the history of that field, Tom Brady wins on Sunday. He becomes a third. And the other thing, if he throws one touchdown pass this weekend's game, which we already know he did because it's Monday, he has thrown more touchdowns in this millennia at that stadium than any quarterback. Think about that. I mean, he's only played there, so I think he's 16 or 14. He's 14-2 there.
Yeah.
Because he's played 17 years, and the 1 year he was injured. Well, and they've never – the Bills haven't been in the playoffs in this millennia.
Wow.
So he's played – this will be his 17th game. He'll be – if they win – when they won, I'm sorry, 15-2.
I'm just thinking about that number. There's a whole generation of quote-unquote Bills fans that have never seen a Bills playoff game.
Think about that. So
we saw four in a row Super Bowl appearances.
Yeah,
so
right.
Joe has a child who in his lifetime has never seen a losing season. Never in your son's life have they had a losing season. And only twice did they not make the playoffs. When they didn't make the playoffs, it was in 2002 in between the two, in between the first and second Super Bowl win. They went 9-7. And then the year that Brady was out, they still went 11-5.
And didn't make it. Yeah.
They went 11-5 and didn't make it. San Diego was 8-8 and hosted a home game. We at 11-5 don't. But on the other hand, so how crazy is that? Now, because it is Friday, my question to both of you, what is the over and under of how many dildos will be thrown out onto the field?
Well, my question is Matt Lauer attending the game? Because that might weigh the odds.
It depends. If the button that locked the door got jammed or not and he can get out of the office. But last year, it was great. And I implore any non-football fans to YouTube and or Google this. In the middle of a game, you got to listen to the Patriots radio broadcast, the Bills radio broadcast, and the national TV. At first, people are like, oh, a ref flew a flag. That's not a flag. And you can hear them like, can you say dildo on TV?
It's almost like that part in Austin Powers 2, where it's just like, that looks like a giant wang. You know, it's like it goes to the next thing. But yeah, it's like they actually, Barstool Sports did a video, kind of a little mini documentary on the dildo guys.
I mean, think about that. You got to plan that out.
Right. But then, like, I saw the video, like, of the two guys that, like, sort of became the dildo guys. Like, the mother was there.
Think about that. The dildo guys.
The dildo guys. Plural.
Now, here's who I feel bad for. Somebody had to go and pick that up off the floor. And you know, if that guy works for the Bills for the next 40 years, he's always going to be the dildo guy.
Oh, yeah. No, but I saw
Hey, dildo guy, get us some coffee. I'm the president of the Bills.
Right.
Whatever, dildo guy.
Is it worse to be dildo guy or ball boy? I don't know what the...
Well, what if it was the ball boy?
I saw the video. It was the ref, so I feel that. Yeah.
But how great is that?
But the ref, I saw it. Like the ref kind of gingerly kind of picked it up like you would like a flaming piece of shit and just sort of flicked it off to the side. I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe he just sort of kicked it off the field.
I hope he kicked it off the field. But that's – now, credit where credit's due. The Bills suck. They've sucked for a long time. They actually have a winning record going into this and are flirting with disaster when it comes to making the playoffs this year. But the Bills – Mafia, and you listen to every Patriot talk, you guys haven't been to the stadium. I've been to a few stadiums where it's crazy. You're in a neighborhood. You're not in a city. Like you're and I'm not talking big construction or apartment complexes. These are real, and they line the streets for a good mile to throw things and scream at the buses and moon people relentlessly.
Oh, who are the assholes in our neighborhood? In our neighborhood. In our neighborhood. Hey, who brought the dildos to our neighborhood? The dildos that we throw each day. It was New Era Field, by the way.
Okay.
I guess it's, you know.
It's Rich Stadium.
Yeah, it's Rich Stadium.
Hey, where do the Bruins play?
The garden.
Yeah. Does anybody call it? What's it been called? It's been called like.
No, it's a TD Garden.
TD Garden. Has you ever say, we're going to the TD Garden? But it was something before it was TD Garden.
TD Bank North.
TD Bank North Center Arena.
I remember. No, it was going to be Shamit Bank at one point.
Gillette Stadium. What was it going to be called? CSMG Field. Remember that? For a brief moment in time, right before Gillette bought naming rights to the new stadium, it was sold to like this sort of like weird like financial bank entity, but it was called CRMG. Look it up.
And it's a real ring to it.
Right, exactly. So it lasted for like a month, and then Gillette's like, you know what?
I think we're all set.
Fuck that. So my lock of last week,
right.
I'm saying 35-10 Patriots.
I don't know why you have to hem and haw over it. We saw the game.
Yeah, but I want
to report the news.
35-10 Brady becomes the third winningest quarterback to play there, and number one in touchdown passes this millennia.
Right. And do you think if Gronk sees a dildo in the end zone, like he'll spike it? Like, do you think?
I do. I actually do. Yes. Yes, because he was not playing last year when the dildo was thrown there. So I do think he would spike it.
Oh, boy.
You know.
All right.
Stay classy, Buffalo. Stay classy. Jim, what time do you got there?
I don't have the time.
Let's try this again.
6:17.
All right, we'll try this again. Jim, what time is it?
Is it time for the random video? Random. I can't even talk. Random video game of the week pick?
Yeah, sure thing.
Hold on.
Way to read the cue cards.
Surely it is.
And don't call me Shirley. Jim's going over and he's going to grab a game off of my Nintendo shelf because each and every one of yous is waiting to hear what I have to say.
Utes.
Yeah, the two. What do you mean, utes?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Two youths.
So Jim picked a game.
All right.
Jacques's already on it because he knows exactly what game it is. He's getting the book written by Pat Contry, who I guess we're just praying that he listens to our podcast.
Accidentally.
And, right, you know, stumbles upon it.
Or at least his lawyers.
Right, exactly.
Guys, I'm going to call a timeout here for a second. Do we want to go forward with this? This is a game that I have previously picked.
Oh, you failed. There's 270 games there.
You've done. I just don't want people to think that they're watching a rewatch.
Right.
Well, for those who don't know, Jim's a little person, and he can only reach a couple of the shelves. So,
I think he doesn't live on the 8th floor of his apartment building.
Should I try again?
Yes, please. So that's what makes it random. What game was it, by the way?
It was Russian Attack.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's old news. Although, actually, it could be new news. Russian Attack.
Have you played? Yeah. Fake news. Right. It could be fake news, right. Is what you mean.
We could all.
All right, I got a good one.
All right, here we go. So it's not.
What about the game?
Well, hey, now. So it's not Snake's Revenge. It's not Solar Jetman. I got to know exactly what this is. I'm not just stalling for time. I have to know that he picked up, I presume to be, Snake Rattle and Roll. No. God damn it. What is it? I don't know. It's soccer.
You got it.
Yeah.
Is this one of the original like 8 games or something like that?
Yeah, the original Black Box games. Yeah. Yeah. All right, soccer. The
Black Box games.
Right, exactly. Black boxes matter. So
all boxes matter.
So
ladies,
shut up. So soccer's an old game. I don't know. It's like I don't give a shit about soccer now. I didn't give a shit about it back in 87 when it came out. It's, you know, it's like just one of those. Have you ever played like 10-yard fight, like those old, shitty, old Nintendo games? Like, ice hockey is probably the best example of an early sports game on the Nintendo Entertainment System. I'd rather talk about that. Actually, I did talk about that. That was one of our random video game reviews. This is soccer. Never played it. I don't know where this came from. It just sort of landed on Earth in front of my doorstep, and I took it in, and I raised it as if it were one of my own. I would have loved you if you were the color of a baboon's ass, soccer. So it's a good, I don't know. I'm going to say it's a shitty game, and I'm going to say that Pat Contry, who wrote the Ultimate NES Guidebook, gave it 2 stars. And 2.5 stars. No, it was close.
He wrote through his review himself.
Okay, so this is his first line. In this no-frills sports title, players can compete in a 5-versus-5 single soccer match with 7 selectable international teams, 3 play lengths, and 5 difficulty levels. So the description of the game of soccer is almost as boring as the game of soccer. And no, so actually, soccer is a very, very
In Japan,
good
game. Did they call this game football? Do you know?
I don't even know if this even. I don't know. I don't know what it was called. It was called like Sakuru.
Or did they respect their citizenship too much not to release it?
I think they called it Happy Fun Time Ball Kick.
And how much? You don't own this gem, but you feel a burning need to get it.
$3 with shipping.
$4.
Double it.
$6.
Six. I think it's for nostalgia.
Yeah.
I think it's just so people are like, oh my God, you can't believe this.
I think people are buying it for the actual cart so they can take it out and put like a real good game inside it. Like they just want the case. It can turn into a bong or something. I don't know. So whatever. Soccer.
You put your weed
in. So if you're looking for some gifts for the kids this year.
Yeah, exactly.
So you got don't $6.
If you got $6 laying around.
So I finished because, you know, I'm a completist.
Gross. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. And thank you. I finished season 2 of Stranger Things, which now Joe is behind, so we can't talk about that. So my Netflix, Amazon hacked video review of the week would be Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, right. The Gilbert Gottfried documentary called Gilbert.
It is great.
Yeah, it's available on, I think it's available on Hulu. I would know because I legally watched it. So it's also on iTunes.
It is. It's Gilbert is, well, first of all, like, you know, I think we started ripping off like Pod Save America when we first started doing the podcast. And more we're ripping off Gilbert's
I was a ripoff of Gilbert. From the beginning. I'm a purist.
It's true. I mean, but it is. That's probably collectively, if we both have our top three favorite podcasts, we both have Gilbert in the top three.
But why is Gilbert your pick?
Because that documentary was a lot more. He's talked about a lot on the podcast. I've seen clips about it. And I'm thinking, okay, I've seen everything that he has to offer kind of thing. You know, I know his routine and I know his. But I didn't. There was so much more that I didn't know. I was planning on just basically playing into the background and getting some other stuff done. And I'm like, no.
You
just
got sucked kinda, in.
Yeah, got really glued in.
It moves really well.
He fucking takes a bus.
Right.
Everywhere.
Like, all of his gigs. Like, if he has a gig in Chicago or something, and he lives in New York City, he'll take a mega bus, one of those chicken buses, yeah. Like those $2 buses.
Is he afraid of flying?
No, he's cheap.
He's afraid of spending money.
He's notoriously cheap.
Yeah, I would do that only because I hate flying.
Right.
I hate flying.
Yeah.
I hate it.
But, like, but if you were a world-renowned comedian, you would have chartered your own bus, correct?
Yeah.
Like, Gronkowski has his own bus.
Right. No. He's paying his... I mean, we're literally talking like, and these buses don't go direct. I mean, they stop a lot away. And it's been, well, it seemed never since I've been on one of these buses, but every joke about bus stations and stuff, and you can see people getting on the bus. And there was a lot of normal people getting on the bus, but you're like, you're a celebrity. Like, hanging out with people on a bus.
Maybe there's a lot of inspiration there, too, from the people on the bus or something. I don't know.
No, he's just cheap.
Just really cheap.
On the bus on the way to the USA studios to do Up All Night.
Oh, my God.
The
Gilbert Gottfried's Up All Night, man. We actually
did
a sketch.
We did a great Gilbert Up All Night.
There were two Gilbert Gottfried sketches. But Gilbert Gottfried, yeah, he's been an inspiration to us since God knows when, since USA Up All Night. And then to wrap up on his cheapness, while he's away on a gig, the documentary team is, you know, with his wife, who's also the producer of the podcast, very lovely woman. And while he's away, she shows the documentary team under his bed, under their bed, the crates and crates of hotel soaps, hotel toiletries, everything. The robe. A towel you could get from a hotel, like a shirt, like glom shirts that you get on the, like merch he would just get on like from a radio station, he would take home with him. And then his wife would have to put it in one of those storage bags that you vacuum seal so that they can store it under the bed.
If he isn't married, truly, he is the star of the most awful episode of Hoarders you've ever seen. Like I have the feeling that she throws a lot of shit out, you know, when he doesn't know, but there's so much stuff there.
Why wouldn't they? Now, he likes to make money. Why doesn't he sell the soaps that he
It's funny because they actually talked about that. Like, one of the other comedians was like, he's still bringing merch to the show. And it's not like he has a merch guy in a stand out front. It's like, if you want to meet him as he's leaving, he has a bag of his DVDs that he'll... Like, who buys DVDs anymore?
Right, exactly.
And he is... It's pointed out in the documentary, he works very, very, very blue and gets hired by Disney all the time. Which there's not
say all
a lot.
The time. Well, he got hired by in the early 90s and mid 90s.
But a couple major roles. And
the
that
parrot in Aladdin or
yeah.
something like that, right?
Yeah, like he was in the original movie and then he was in the sequel. And probably like every sequel after that. He was in all three Problem Childs. He is truly a gem. And Gilbert is a very good documentary. It also highlights the work and later life of his sister, one of his sisters. I'm blanking on her name, but she was a photographer and she actually passed away before the movie was released. So they dedicated the movie to her, but it shows him going to treatments with her
almost daily.
Yeah. And doing a benefit for St. Jude Hospital.
You have to kind of be in the weeds on this, but Danny Thomas created the St. Jude's Hospital, mm-hmm. and Danny Thomas, just Google Danny Thomas. It's the first thing that will come up.
Yeah.
Gilbert talks about the alleged Danny Thomas fetish a great deal. And the fact that he was doing that benefit at all is bizarre.
Right.
Beyond
right.
bizarre.
Right. As Jim Carrey said, that's the kind of guilt that makes you build hospitals.
So now let's wrap it up a bit. But here's my parenting tip of the week before we end. And I was telling Jim, if you got small kids and we're talking under four, under five, and it's Christmas – don't buy them shit. Like, literally pack up old toys that they already own. Let them unbox it. They don't need anything. Stop doing things for kids until they can remember it, till you get the credit for it. Because, oh, remember that great Christmas we had when you were three and we spent $1,000? No! Well, save yourself that money. Put it away. Spend it on them when they can remember it and you get the credit, or just get a hooker. Either one, it's your call. But that's my parenting tip. Don't spend money this Christmas on kids until they're old enough to appreciate it. Joe?
Finally tonight, parenting. I don't know. I have nothing else really to add to your parenting tips except for a shitty John Oliver impersonation.
No, John Oliver impersonations. Thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you.
What do we got?
More of a financial tip. Take the $1,000 that you save not buying presents, that take it and invest it in Verizon and Comcast and all that stuff. Because when
net neutrality goes gone. Away, which it sounds like it's going to, I think you're going to be on to something. It looks like that's you can kiss that.
I guess.
Bye-bye.
If you can't beat them, invest in them.
Yeah.
That's a great way to look at it.
That's a good parenting tip.
Yeah.
So we're going out on Dan Cray and Beyond It's Gomer, which was a tribute in 93. We wrote this song for Gomer Pop. We didn't write it. We just made it up as we went along. But more importantly than that, please do not forget.
The rain was cool, but now he's down.